This is Basha Bawat, and you are listening to CRTR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Sunday, Monday, Sunday, Thursday night only, Thunderbird Radio Hell.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, Jay. How's it going?
All right, I guess.
I didn't think I would bump into you in the street.
No, usually on Thursday nights, I'm listening to Thunderbird Radio Hell.
So am I.
Yeah, usually the radio has a show on at 9 p.m. to 11.
9 p.m. to 11 p.m., that's right.
It's a pretty good show.
Is that the show with the live bands?
Yeah, it sounds like there's talking between the band and the guy.
Yeah, that guy.
Interviewing bands while they're still alive.
I'll check it out.
Live from Thunderbird Radio Hell on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
Well, 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 welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners. However you've decided to spend the hour with us, we are very, very glad to have you. One of those things that is really imperative is to realize that sometimes our hormones affect us. So whether or not it's because it's your cycle, whether you're male or female, because there is menopause as well as menopause, sometimes you can control what you do by what you eat. There is some truth to that saying, you are what you eat and how you can make a difference. And I've got a very special guest joining me tonight where we're going to be chatting about nutrition and how you can make it affect your sexuality and your sensuality and, of course, your well-being. So welcome to the show, Joanne Mall.
Thanks very much, Caroline. It's nice to be here.
Thank you. I'm very glad to have you on, and especially in light of the fact that we're able to talk about both menopause as well as menopause. When I met you a few weeks ago, or I guess actually it was probably before Christmas.
It was.
Time has flown.
It has.
And it's one of those things where I remember when we were sitting there and where you start chatting about in regards to how hormone levels can affect how we feel, and you'd mentioned that, and I got quite excited because John Gray had just done his book, Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice, in regards to about hormonal levels, and I got really excited because you have an in-depth knowledge of nutrition and can speak a lot more about that. So tell me a little bit more about in regards to in your nutrition background.
Sure. Well, my training is as a certified clinical iridologist.
An iridologist.
Yes, which is analyzing the eye. I also have studied sclerology, so analyzing the iris and the white part or sclera of the eye for looking at tissue condition of the body. And it's a non-invasive tool that you can use to see what's going on inside the body on many different levels. And from that, I've extensively studied nutrition as the tool to correct these imbalances, as well as doing other separate training in herbs and homeopathics and Reiki energy and all kinds of added stuff that all makes a fun mix of holistic modalities to use with people.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
When you take on a new client, what kind of things do you go through just to try and gauge what in regards to their nutrition levels, if something's lacking, etc.?
Yeah. Well, I do a full intake, so it's a personal analysis that does a whole lifestyle overview I look at any symptoms of anything that they're experiencing. They do a full questionnaire, which is a symptomology questionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
And based on symptoms that they describe, can often point to nutritional deficiencies.
Mm.
So, for example, you know, issues with constipation and, you know, cold hands and feet and, thinning hair and different things like that can point to thyroid disturbances. So there's a lot of different indicators that can point to nutritional deficiencies or organ upset.
Mm-hmm.
And then I use that concurrently with the eye analysis to look at what's going on in the body in terms of constitution. So their genetics,
okay,
which is what you mostly see in the iris, and as active, what we call active pathology, which is what you see in the sclera, based on, like, if you were to look at your neighbor's eyes,
mm-hmm,
they were to look at your eyes, no two eye prints are the same. It's like your fingerprint. So based on the markings and the little road maps that you see in the white part of the eye, they all indicate something going on in the body, because the eye is broken down into a map, and it's in a clock-type fashion. And so you line up what you see where according to the map of the body, which is called a homuncular system.
Homuncular system.
So it's like the ear. Ear reflexology.
Mm.
Probably heard of that.
I have actually used it for addiction, actually, in the downtown east side quite a bit.
Yeah, or ear acupuncture, mm-hmm, is very popular, as well as reflexology on the feet and hands.
Mm.
That's called a homuncular therapy as well, because there are reflex points in all those areas that actually refer back to everywhere in the body. So the eye operates on the same premise. And the study of iridology has been around for a couple hundred years, and it actually seems to be more popular in Europe, which Europe's always ahead of us.
I was just going to ask.
Us being North America.
That is
and
true.
And even you know, markings in the eye, you know, go back to Hippocrates and, you know, Chinese medicine. You know, we just aren't really up to speed in this culture, but we're getting there.
Why do you think the trend is bringing this forward in Europe and hopefully more in North America soon?
That's a really good question. I mean, actually, for iridology studies, the naturopath that I've done my training with, he teaches all over the world, and you know, they've really done a lot more with it in Russia. Even it seems to be something that they've taken on. Most medical doctors in Europe and Far Eastern and Northern countries have taken iridology on as part of their studies, and you know, it's still seen as a very alternative therapy here. It's not something that, you know, a medical doctor would ever implement. And, and even naturopathic schools really don't actually study iridology a lot. They're familiar with it, but they don't actually do a lot of the training.
Wow.
So it's really its own sort of thing out there, an evolving science, but has a lot of merit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My clients often say to me, how do you know that? And yes, I could call myself a little bit psychic, but no, really, I'm just looking at what's there, and I'm, you know, and it's, you know, it's somewhat, I wouldn't say subjective, but, you know, you have to put the whole picture together. It's not just looking at one thing, which is why it's a really useful tool, along with a good health history intake, and obviously questioning your client and, you know, putting together a whole picture of what's going on with them.
I think that's awesome. In regards to, is there any things that a potential client should be looking at, like, before they come see you, like some questions almost? Like, say, for example, if I'm thinking of you as a guru in terms of being able to, like, help and heal people.
Mm.
So are there certain things that they should be thinking about, like, in regards to letting you know beforehand that makes it a little bit easier?
Yeah, often I'll try and send, or I do send the intake questionnaire ahead of time as I'm coming, so they have some time to really sit down. Same with the symptomology questionnaire, so they really have some time to sit down and take time to go through it, because I don't like people to rush, because it is trying to remember, you know, past any traumas, emotional, physical traumas, surgeries, any incidents, things that will be part of that, you know, big, you know, puzzle that we're trying to fit the pieces together to get a good picture of what has brought them to me in the first place. And I do tend to see a fair number of people who've gone the allopathic, or what's the conventional medical route, and, you know, have just come up against frustration that they're not getting answers or they're not really getting any results to their satisfaction, and they want to try something different.
And I think it's great that you offer that. How did you find out about it originally?
Going back 20-some years, I was, 20 years, living in White Rock, and actually went to an iridologist for my own health issues that I was trying to get some resolution for, and had been seeing a naturopath and had done some different therapies. And the iridologist that I saw, you know, she really was very grounded, had a really good handle on lots of different health aspects, and I guess that must have stuck with me, because we, after that, moved back to Ontario, Southern Ontario, which is where we're from, and, you know, I had my third child and was really looking to, I'd kind of been mostly at home, but trying to figure out, okay, what do I want to do when I grow up, and the holistic health thing, because I was getting so passionate about it, just on my own health journey, that it was time to go, I want to look at this as a career. And so that's what started my path in that direction. So I just started looking at different courses, and the iridology was something that really resonated with me, and that's the route I went.
In terms of, I thought it was neat in our pre-show chat, I didn't realize that menopause was a more recent medical terminology. So I actually thought one of my guests actually coined it and thought it was really cute. So
Andropause. Yeah, the male menopause.
Mandropause.
Yeah. It's probably not been something that's been fully acknowledged, I guess is the right way to put it, where it definitely is. Something that men do experience as they hit, you know, sort of that 45 to 55 age range.
And what are some of the symptoms, just that if a man's listening out there right now and he hears, or perhaps his partner, and it's like, oh, that he should probably be screened for that?
Yeah. I think the biggest factor that goes along with it is decreased libido.
Okay.
But certainly, I wouldn't say necessarily depression, but sort of a flatness of mood. Possibly mood fluctuations, irritations, just like women go through.
Okay.
As well. Physically, you know, there might be some other just changes, a little bit more of that middle age spread. Happens with women as well.
I wish it didn't. So between that and hair growing in different places.
we all want to age gracefully and well, no complication. And I'm hitting middle-aged myself. I mean, 60 is the new 50 and 50 is the new 40 and all those fun things. But, certainly my goal for myself is, to actually improve my vitality and improve my quality of life as I age. And, I really can truthfully say that I feel I'm in better shape now than I was in my 20s.
I think that's fantastic.
Mentally, emotionally, physically, definitely, because of what I've learned and what I've incorporated into my life. And everyone has that opportunity, Every day we have a choice of what we put in our bodies, how we treat our bodies, what we do activity-wise, mentally, emotionally, where we go with our thoughts and our whole demeanor. Every day we have that opportunity to learn something new and incorporate something new and make different choices that will give us that vitality that we want.
What are some things our listeners can do in terms of, and especially because sometimes we do get overwhelmed with stress, myself included, and just in terms of being able to set really firm boundaries and just remain healthy, even though we go through our ups and downs, those ebbs and flows?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, more and more they recognize that stress is like the silent killer. And there's a brilliant doctor from Montreal, actually, Dr. Hans Selye, that was a lot of his career work, was the study of stress. And if you Google him, you'll find out all kinds of cool information. And there's actually an Institute of Stress.
Wow.
I think it is based in Montreal. And, you know, he really researched the impact of stress on the body. And of course, there is positive stress and negative stress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, positive stress actually can fuel good things, good responses in our body emotionally, mentally, physically, like, you know, graduation, a marriage, you know, a birth. I mean, they can also create a lot of negative stress, too. But
mm-hmm.
in an ideal situation, you get the eustress or the happy stress. But it's the negative stress that definitely, and I think in this day and age with our, you know, constant barrage of technology,
mm-hmm.
as much as we use it as a tool, it's also a lot to our detriment. I mean, I myself will fully admit it's really hard to unplug, you know, some days and get, you know, off the computer and away from the cell phone and, you know, all the stuff. And, I mean, you look at people, especially young kids, you know, they're always on their, my daughters are, if they listen to this program, they'll go, oh, Mom. But, you know, they're always texting and it's like, put it away. Right? So it's really, how do we de-stress? How do we take ourselves out of that fast-paced realm? And we have to really, like you said, set boundaries and set times where we unplug.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's lots of discussions that I've tapped into where there's some really good suggestions, you know, for a family to agree that, you know, at dinner time we don't answer the phone, and when we come into the house, you know, everybody's cell phone and BlackBerry goes in a drawer, and you don't have access to it for, let's even say, the rest of the evening, you know, and parents have to be accountable for this too. They're going to set the example, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's setting up those routines that I think could be really helpful for people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, high cortisol levels in the body, which is the stress hormone.
Yes. John Gray actually mentioned that too in his book.
Yeah, huge implications. Yeah. John Gray is just a master at, you know, the study of men and women and their differences in brain chemistry and all kinds of great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he has written such great material, and his tapes and everything is fantastic. So if you have an opportunity to pick up one of his books, you know, they're a worthwhile read. And, you know, he does talk a lot about healthy nutrition and the impacts of healthy nutrition. Actually, one of his more recent books, a few years old, is called Mars and Venus, Diet and Exercise Solution.
Okay.
And he talks about specific diet and exercise approaches that are a little bit more specific for men than for women. And there are reasons behind that because, you know, when we're talking about hormones and healthy hormones, I mean, men are predominantly ruled by dopamine, the neurotransmitter dopamine. And women are more governed by the neurotransmitter serotonin. And they have their roles in the body, and they have their roles in, you know, happy brain chemistry, happy mood balance. And then, of course, all that comes into play in the endocrine or the hormonal system, which, you know, nothing operates separately in the body.
Mm-hmm.
Everything works in concert, like a big orchestra, and especially the hormonal system.
Mm-hmm.
And people often forget that hormones actually constitute quite a few different things. It's not just, you know, estrogen and testosterone and progesterone. You know, there's thyroid hormones, there's, you know, adrenal hormones, the pancreas is a hormonal gland. You know, there's certain hormones produced by the reproductive system.
Mm-hmm.
But there's all kinds of things, and everything works together. Everything works as this perfectly operating system. And the body's goal is to always keep things, you know, on slightly either side of balance. You know, it's that yin-yang effect.
Mm-hmm.
Always kind of up and down, but always running around that middle ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we have cortisol, which is our stress hormone, running through our bloodstream more often than not, 24/7. It's a what's called a catabolic hormone, or a breaking down hormone in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, repair, tissue repair, you know, growth, production types of functions in the body cannot happen at the same time when the breaking down hormone is higher in the body. And if it's higher in the body all the time, that creates a problem. Because, you know, in caveman days, if we were under stress, it was the fight or flight response.
Mm-hmm.
That's what stress is, right? And so if you were, you know, being run after, you know, or sought after by a, whatever, woolly mammoth.
By a bear or something, yes.
You know, or T-Rex or whatever, right? Like, you make a decision, I'm going to stay and mm-hmm. fight because I have to defend my home or my babies or whatever, or you get the hell out of there
mm-hmm.
and you're off like a shot. And so the adrenaline that you need to do those things is there. But in this day and age, we don't do that. We get cut off on the highway, and our heart starts pumping, and our blood pressure goes up, and we can feel that adrenaline going through our body, and we don't get out of the car and run, right?
True.
We
live with it.
We freak out. We maybe curse, or we, you know, are shaking. May have to pull over because of that, but we don't have any really good ways of dissipating adrenaline in our bodies unless we're, you know, really active and exercising, and of course that's a really key thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how can we alleviate some of the stress by some of the foods that we eat?
Well, and people ask me that general question all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I were to do something for my health right off the bat,
yes.
What are the first things that I should do? And I always say, look at what you consume that you know is, I'm not going to say bad for you, but...
Processed,
that is, I call it nutrient robbing.
I like that, nutrient robbing.
Yeah, because there are things that are a pile of foods that are nutrient replenishing,
mm-hmm.
right, and provide good nutrition. And there are other things on the other side that we pretty much know are nutrient robbers. And if you don't know, you could probably do a little bit of, you know, reading and find out very quickly. You know, coffee, alcohol, sugar, processed foods. And I do a lot with people right off the bat. I use a cleansing and replenishing system that I put people on a program that's a detox. And it really helps do what one of my clients actually offered to me, this fabulous term called course correction. Because that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We get off course and we get off track with our eating and our sleeping and our lifestyle habits. And this system really helps to do that course correction where you can focus on this program, and then you can do the course correction by knowing, okay, here's your list of things that you need to eliminate
mm-hmm.
for up to 30 days as best as you can. And you have to make a decision that that's where I need to go.
Mm-hmm.
And people will say to me, but I only have one coffee a day. Or I only have one glass of wine every day with my dinner. And I only do this, and I only do that. Okay, but first of all, add it all up, and let's see where you're at.
Hmm.
And so these are some of the things I find out when I do my questionnaire with people,
mm-hmm.
is let's see exactly, is it really one cup of coffee a day, or is it maybe two and three? You know, is it really one glass of wine, or is it actually two
five.
Three because it's a healthy 8-ounce glass of wine, right? Like, everyone's spectrum of moderation
varies
very wide. So I always say, let's look at all these negative things and let's take them out of your diet first of all. Let's clean it up. And I get people to do that the first, you know, 2 to 5 days, even before they start the program that I put them on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are first steps. Let's get this out of your diet. And, you know, some people are very adamant. You know, I can't make these choices for people. I'm just the facilitator. I give them the information and I give them the guidance, but they have to make the decision.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's about choices. And some people will say to me, I will not give up my cup of coffee a day. And I said, well, that's your choice. So let's continue on with the program, but be open to the benefits of maybe making this switch. And sometimes, happily, they find that, you know, a couple weeks into the program, they feel very naturally energized, And it's amazing when you feed the body at the right level with the right nutrition that those cravings naturally disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the body is optimally replenished, there's no need for those sort of nutrient-robbing cravings that we get hooked on,
mm-hmm.
especially the sugar.
Sugar's a big one.
Sugar's huge.
And what do you think that is?
I think it's...
besides the fact it tastes good, but...
Well, it does taste good in a way if you set yourself up for that taste, right?
Hmm.
It's like the more you eat, the more your body wants. And
yeah.
There's a lot of crazy things that go on in the body. You know, there's something called Candida albicans, which is a yeast that naturally exists in the body, but if it gets overgrown in the body and kind of runs rampant,
mm-hmm.
Yeast, as we know, if you bake bread,
yeah.
What do you...
It rises.
Yeah, and what do you feed the yeast to get it to start? What do you do to inoculate the yeast?
You can tell I don't cook, and we actually...
Honey or sugar.
Oh, of course.
Right? And you get the bubbling and the fermenting action of the yeast. Well, it works the same way in the body, so the yeast is going, feed me, and it tells you, I want sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So to get a lot of those things under control, you really have to be focused with your nutrition and putting in the healthy foods. And obviously, added sugars are the main ones we're looking to eliminate. If you're doing natural sugars that are in fruits and vegetables, you want to steer away from the higher sugar foods, like the higher glycemic foods or the higher sugar foods, like, you know, grapes and things like that.
Or pineapple, a lot of... Maybe higher citrus?
Yeah. And then you want to, you know, focus on more greens and lower sugar. But in a strict candida diet, and I have done this with clients and other practitioners will do the same, you know, you really got to cut out even the natural sugars for a while, and naturally fermented foods, any kind of vinegars, things like that, because you just need to get that under control in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And you use supplements and herbs and things to also help bring it under control. So we've jumped all over the place.
We have. And I was actually going to ask if there's different times in, like, how often should somebody, once they've kind of got things under control, come see you, basically? Like, if somebody's a client?
Well, for first, while we're doing probably a couple of visits in the first month, and then once we get something happening, returning, you know, probably every 3 to 6 weeks to check on progress, and I do consults as well by phone and email, so we can do easy quick check-ins that way, and you know, then it's really keeping that course correction that we've done, keeping it on track. So it's coming up with an ongoing plan to make sure that stays
active. And I imagine as we evolve, like, you're going to have, there's going to be different nutritional needs, obviously, for somebody who's preteen compared to somebody who's menopausal to postmenopausal.
Yeah, there is.
But?
There is. However, you know, it really just comes back to good basic nutrition.
Okay.
You know, the number of nutrients is different,
mm-hmm.
or I shouldn't say the quantity. Yes, the amount might be higher at certain periods of your life, and,
mm-hmm.
and certain nutrients may need to be in more concentration.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely at certain periods of your life, but you know, it doesn't. In my experience, really doesn't vary that much. I can do a lot of the same things with any age group and get the same results, because it's just about good, basic, optimal nutrition. And when your body's optimally replenished, you can start to pay attention to your own body signals about what it needs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just follow your inner guidance system as well. You know, that's something we've got very disconnected from, is an inner guidance system. And that's, I believe, a lot to do with our fast food.
Well, our fast food culture, essentially.
Our fast food culture. You know, with preservatives and dyes and artificial everything in a lot of foods, our brain mechanisms get way out of whack
mm-hmm.
as to what we really need as far as whole foods go. And, of course, that comes right around to play back havoc on the whole
lifestyle,
hormonal system, and what creates healthy hormones, healthy mood, healthy libido, everything.
Mm-hmm. And I was actually going to touch on that as well, like with the whole fast food thing. We really do live in a fast food culture, and you touched on it earlier in regards to that we are really, really plugged in. And even if you look at dating, like with online dating as well, even though there's been some, I know some people who've had some very successful relationships from, you know, and gotten married, etc., where they've met that way. Sometimes I wonder, because it's just, I think it's great that there's lots of opportunity, but it reminds me of fast food sometimes, where it's almost easier, like, not to try in relationships sometimes, because it's there.
Yeah.
Like, it's really easy to go online, and it's like going on to eBay, and it's like, oh, cool, that one looks kind of cute.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, it's an interesting time that we live in, you know, with the internet, And I was at a women's networking meeting last evening, and there was a private investigator was the guest speaker.
Oh.
And she actually was talking about online dating and sort of the pitfalls of it.
Many.
And she was, you know, telling everybody, you know, it can be a good thing, but you really do have to be cautious out there, because people misrepresent themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do that online, because you don't have you're not meeting the person face to face.
No, not at the right away, which is why it's so important to meet them as quickly as possible.
Oh, for sure.
But as well as that, in terms of the cortisol levels as well in our systems, because we do get stressed out, and sometimes after the honeymoon period in the relationship, sometimes we just drop it, because we get to the work part, and it's almost like having a garden where we need to go back and we need to weed it. Sometimes we need to water it, because it's important to have those tears and the sunshine as well. So it's this lovely cycle.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as we know that it's a cycle where we will get through things, I think it's important.
Yeah.
Especially in this day and age. But I like the concept of going back and cutting out a lot of the processed foods, et cetera, and really looking at what we eat.
Yeah.
And I like what you do in terms of about actually taking a look at the whole history in terms of, and I was going to ask if you meant emotional traumas as well as physical traumas.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously people have different comfort levels as to how much they want to open up about those kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it is important. And if there are some, you know, significant things, that they can at least give me a snippet of what might be going on.
Mm-hmm.
It plays a huge role. A huge role. I mean, you know, we very much underestimate that sometimes, in terms of how it, first of all, hits our psyche and then manifests physically.
Mm-hmm.
And the body has lots of ways of telling you what not working well in emotionally and mentally, you know, spiritually. Gabor Maté from Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. Hungry Ghosts.
Brilliant doctor. When the Body Says No.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic book. You know, when we don't have the boundaries and we don't have certain things that we need to not protect us, but to set those parameters emotionally,
mm-hmm.
you know, then the body can start to speak for us.
Yeah.
To set us up in a situation where those boundaries get put into place in different ways. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and, you know, how it's kind of a good segue into how emotions can upset your glands.
Mm-hmm.
Again, nutrition is super, super important. I mean, our body is a food body. You know, we have to feed it on a food level. And if you look at it in terms of, you know, this is my temple, and in this lifetime, I have this one body. It's the only place I'm going to live for this whole lifetime.
Hmm.
If I don't look after it, where am I going to live? You know?
Mm-hmm.
We don't look after our bodies, you know, if you believe in the soul, the spirit comes in, can go out. But if you want to be here in this lifetime and enjoy this school of life that we're living in at this particular time, when you happen to be here, you know, you want to look after your house,
mm-hmm.
your temple. And, you know, it has to be done through proper nutrition, through clean water, through, you know, sunshine, and through happy thinking, happy emotions. And, you know, just to give you a couple of examples, you know, emotions that can affect the pituitary gland, for example, which is like the master gland in the brain, right?
The puberty one.
And it dictates a lot of direction, a lot of directions, puts out a lot of hormones to give direction to other glands in the endocrine system. Some of those emotional results of that can make you feel, you know, inadequate and feeling out of control. And the feelings will often dominate over logic. You know, you'll be moody and have changeable temperament. The thyroid, you know, on an emotional level, it sits at the throat. And, you know, if you know anything about energy centers, that's a whole other thing that comes into the endocrine system. All the glands are very focused on the energy centers or the chakras of the body. And the throat sits over the fifth, or the thyroid sits in the throat chakra, which is about being able to speak your truth and being able to, you know, be true and be who you are. And so a lot of people who have difficulty on an emotional level communicating, you know, being truthful about what they think, what they feel, have often throat or can lead to thyroid problems. An underactive thyroid may produce emotional symptoms such as going to pieces easily, crying easily, disliking work under pressure, dislike being watched, you know, kind of a bit of depressive or irritability, mood swings, low self-esteem. So those are all things that can be connected with underfunctioning of the thyroid gland. You know, the thymus, which is the immune one at the breastbone, it's the commander of the immune system. You know, it produces the T cells, and the T cells are the bosses that, again, tell other cells what to do, when, where. And the thymus gland has, I mean, they used to irradiate thymus glands in babies years ago, unbelievably, because they didn't think that it's, they thought it was weird that it should be so large, because as it, as you age, it shrinks. And, yeah, that was a common thing up until about, I don't know, maybe 40, 50 years ago.
Wow.
Quote me on that, but it used to happen. And, you know, if there's, you know, certain emotions, if they're felt really deeply and long enough, you know, they can affect the thymus gland function and therefore be depressive on your immune system. And some of those emotions might be long-term feelings of not feeling safe or protected, or feeling attacked, you know, having fears. So there's so many things that all play. Like, again, you cannot separate these things out, the mind, the body, the spirit, right? It all works together.
So when, in terms of relationships, because it's almost like me and you equals us, if you've got a partner or you've just started dating someone and they've gone through some changes, how is a good way to get them to perhaps take a look at what they're eating, as a way, especially if they've, they plunge into depression, maybe they've lost their job, just a lot of changes, because we're living in one of those worlds where there, I don't really think there's any certainties.
Yeah, good point. You know, it's, I talk with a lot of my clients who have partners who are often very opposite in their health approach. And that can be obviously very challenging in a relationship, because you have one partner, and I'm going to say nine times out of ten it's the woman, who's, and women for some reason do tend to be more aware, more concerned about their health and that of their family. I think that's a natural instinct.
Definitely.
That's kind of the way I look at it. And oftentimes they're the ones who are trying to be more conscientious about, you know, nutrition and lifestyle, and they have a partner who may not be so supportive or doesn't really want to give a lot of credence to certain things that they might want to try. When you have those situations come up, sometimes it is good to not try and handle it yourself, but you know, I often find, and I'm sure we've all experienced this, where spouses don't accept that information from each other very well. You know, to just make a suggestion for them to go see someone who might have some insight as to what they could do, mm-hmm. or pass them an article, or, you know, something that they might have found on the internet that might have some connection to that issue.
Mm-hmm.
Say, you know, gee, I read this information, and, you know, it kind of talks about how, you know, if we, you know, if you eat better and you cut out caffeine and you do these things, you know, it lessens the stress on your body, and that can kind of help you, you know, shift your
mm-hmm.
your energy, your, you know, improve your sleep, your feeling of well-being. You know, hey, you want to take a look at that, because yeah, we can be very effective.
Mm-hmm. What about if it's say two people who are together who one of the things is going for dessert all the time, and I mean where it's gotten to, instead of just a treat, it's become all the time, and one of the partners has chosen to do something because they want to change. And what would you say in terms of, like, I was just curious in regards to, I'm not being very clear in my question, I'm almost thinking of it almost like an alcoholic, where it's two alcoholics or something like that together, mm-hmm. and then one actually decides to get clean and sober. Because in some ways with food, if you're cutting out a lot of things and really watching what you eat, and say you go out for dinner all the time, it can affect the relationship as well, especially if it's something that you did together. Because I think of food as almost a social thing in many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you're very right. And again, I do see this a lot. I see it a lot with a lot of the couples that I work with, where I'm working with one of the partners.
Mm.
And the other partner is, you know, again, very kind of stuck in their old ways, like they're a meat and potatoes person. Or, you know, yeah, they're definitely a junk food junkie. And they're also a couch potato. And, you know, the one partner is really working to make some shifts, and they're also trying to do it as a family approach, like for the kids. And then, you know, oftentimes my first sort of discussion with them is to say, hey, it's a really good idea for you to have a conversation with your spouse and your kids and say, you know, I'm working on this, and I really am looking for your support. And I'd like us to do some of this together as a family, because I think we're all going to benefit. And really depends on the household. You know, some partners are a little more receptive when it's laid out like that, and other partners like, no way, this is not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at some point you have to decide, okay, am I going to let that affect me, or am I going to just, you know, sort of be the guiding light and lead by example,
mm-hmm.
which is another good approach, because sometimes that works. You know, you just lead by example. You don't have to get on a soapbox, and I've been on my soapbox, trust me. But try to lead by example, and sometimes it, you know, the other person will fall in line a little bit, or, you know, at some point say, hey, you know, let's try this.
Mm-hmm.
No. I mean, part of this, I can even use this as my own example. When I was first doing all my holistic health studies, you know, like 14 years ago, and in my iridology courses, one of the first things I learned about was a concept called food combining, where you kind of simplify your food and your nutrition, and you combine, like, you eat fruit by itself,
mm-hmm.
Because it breaks down very quickly and has obviously natural sugars and a lot more water,
mm-hmm.
so it digests a lot quicker in your system, and you have that in the morning, and then, you know, a little bit later you'll have your, like, a protein, so with lunch you might have tuna salad, and then if you're going to have, like, rice or anything like that, or pasta, you know, you have it with a vegetable sauce, or, you know, steamed vegetables in a salad.
Mm-hmm.
You don't combine meat proteins with starchy carbohydrates.
That reminds me of Food for Life, actually.
That's exactly where it comes from, yeah.
Food for Life,
way back in the 80s.
Yes. I actually felt healthiest, actually, when I followed that.
And, you know, so I got looking at this. It was introduced to me in one of my courses, and I started doing it for myself because I had a lot of issues with my digestion, and I noticed that it, you know, got rid of 5 pounds of post-baby weight after my third very quickly. And, you know, there was a period of upheaval, but once my system got used to it, you know, my digestion really improved. And I've done a lot more things with cleansing and other approaches since then that's improved it even more. But at the time, that was a huge tool for me. And so I was cooking this way at home. I was preparing food this way at home. And, you know, I didn't sort of say, hey, you have to do this. But my husband started doing it on his own initiative as part of what we were having for meals. And, you know, within a couple of weeks, he was also saying, hey, you know, I feel different and I feel better. So it's just getting them to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are open to trying it and then they'll give it a go, they will probably find that, hey, there's something to this.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you just have to take the more quiet, slower approach.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if you could change things in terms of... Actually, I just want to make a comment before I ask that question. One of the things I'm really glad about is just in terms of the, I'm going to say menopause, but that's not what, if you could say that, repeat the clinical term for it now.
Andropause.
Yep. It's nice to hear, because I think as women sometimes, even though I know logically and I read about it all the time, but I hear it very a lot from some of our women listeners and just from people I meet sometimes, where it was almost this conception that men should basically be grabbing at us, and you know, where they're the, you know, always should have this really, really super duper high libido, that it's literally like, it's like when they hit that stage, it's not our fault essentially,
right?
If they're not grabbing at us like they were when they were teenagers,
right? Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Not all men can be Hugh Hefner. I was just reading something about him this morning, I think it was in the dental office, or yesterday. It was just hilarious, you know. The guy doesn't quit, but hey, if you got it, you got it.
True.
But, yeah, but to definitely acknowledge it, know that it is normal, know that there are some very basic things that can be done to help it along, in terms of rebalancing it, you know, and obviously working with practitioner, you know, holistic or allopathic, who is aware of it, can test for it, can look for things, and hopefully find some natural ways of dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, again, nutrition is important at any stage of your life. And sometimes the, you know, hamburger swigging, swallowing, beer drinking, you know, guys that maintain that through their 20s and 30s find that it doesn't serve them very well in their 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, it's all about aging well. So what do we need to look at to do that?
Hmm. And what do we need to look at?
Well, kind of, I'm going to repeat myself here.
I was going to say,
like,
we pretty much...
Yeah, it's getting back to basics. It's looking at what we can take out of our diet. And I go by the 80-20 rule, right?
Mm.
You don't need to be 100% on everything. But you do need to be, most of the time, doing great things for your health and your body and your mind and your spirit.
Mm.
You know, and I will tell you about one book that I have used as a bit of my Bible over the years.
Mm.
It was written by an iridologist / chiropractor. His name is Bernard Jensen, and the book is called Love, Sex, and Nutrition.
Mm.
And, you know, I couldn't even begin to summarize it, because every page has wonderful nuggets on it.
Mm-hmm.
So just go out and find the book, and lots of great information in there on and he just weaves it all together beautifully on the interconnectedness of all these things, and you know, how we really, again, need to just really pay attention to what we're putting in our bodies and how that does affect us on all levels.
Mm-hmm.
And if we want to have, you know, if we want to have that mental calmness, we want to have the happy mood, we want to have, you know, the vitality, energy, presence of mind as we age, you know, we really have to. I mean, I always use the car analogy.
If
you had a car that was as old as your body, and you put in the crappy gas, and, you know, I love the sign above the Shell. They've got the Techron or something, something that they have in the gas, and it shows, you know, the gas without this and how the gunk builds up on the pistons, and then the gas without it, now the pistons are running really clean, and the gas with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep wanting to go into a Shell station and say, can I have that sign? Because I want to use that in my presentation.
They used to have a Cheerio commercial like that, actually, when I was a kid with stick figure.
And it's like, okay, guys, here's the difference. So if you had a car the age of your body and you didn't do a thing to it, you know, you really didn't care about, you never washed it, you never detailed it, you never took it in to the mechanic, you never did an oil change, you never did a lube and filter, you never did a winter tune-up, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
How well would that car be running?
It wouldn't run. It'd be in the junkyard.
I mean, first of all, you never have a car that's 50 years old. Another analogy, you know, it's like your furnace filter or, you know, all these different things that we look after so much better than we do our own bodies half the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're very particular about our possessions, but yet this is our most vital possession, is our body. And what do we do to look after that? You know, what do we really do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we go to the dentist, and yeah, we go, you know, to a doctor for a checkup. But what about all those internal things? You know, and people are very aware of, obviously, lifestyle-related diseases. I mean, most of what afflicts people these days are lifestyle-related diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Well, lifestyle is mostly nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Poor nutritional choices create obesity, create mm-hmm. cardiovascular disease, you know, contribute to cancers, contribute to all kinds of, you know, debilitating conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's back to how do we make better choices? Get back to basics. It's not rocket science, you know? It's really not. It's just getting back to basics. Simple, whole, fresh. You know, keep it super simple. Strategy.
And if they'd like some more support and they want to contact you directly, what's the best way of doing that to find out more information and to book an appointment with you?
They can contact me at my email, which is Joanne, Joanne Mulhall, Mulhall, @gmail.com. And my office line is 604-987-1651.
That's perfect. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Carolyn. It was an absolute pleasure. Well, and we could probably go on for longer, but...
It goes pretty fast, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
Actually, I should ask one last thing. What's next for you?
Oh, gosh, in terms of...
Well, it's 2011 just started, and I imagine you're getting a lot of people with New Year's resolutions. And for you personally, what is this year? What would you like to see?
For me personally, my word for the year is balance. I'm working on really finding that balance that I want in my life for work and play and, you know, ticking off some of those bucket list things. You know, I don't need to have them like in the movie when I'm, like, finding out that I'm not going to be here much longer. I want to be doing it. And, yeah, with New Year's resolutions, you know, it's a tough one. People tend to make them and break them very quickly. And, you know, I think it's about making some good, solid, long-term plans and putting baby steps into place that get you there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as far as we had some January group programs happening. And, you know, you can call me or email me to find out about those programs. You know, they start on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And we also, I work with some colleagues that we do health presentations at least once a month, so you can come and hear some more about what we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's never too late to start making changes.
And that's a really hopeful thing.
I think it's important for us to remember that, because I think when we do get stressed, like you said, that flight or fight still kicks in, and because we tend not to, we sit on it a lot, so it manifests.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important just to realize there is choice.
Yeah, and to take action. Mm-hmm. Take some action, even if it's the smallest thing, you know, take some action to make a change.
That makes sense. It was interesting. I was actually reading an article in The Observer earlier, and they were actually recommending asking what the definition of the word poverty was. And the author actually recommended we start thinking about it in terms of people who feel powerless.
I think that's a good definition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people do feel powerless. You know,
mm-hmm.
They're sitting back thinking that life is happening to them,
yeah.
Rather than taking the attitude that I make my life happen.
Mm-hmm. And I've been guilty of that, too.
Yeah, we all have. Absolutely all have.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're here, to learn these things.
That's true. And also having refreshing reminders as well, which is great.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
It's important to remember it's a cognitive process in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, if you can't control it, because as we did talk about at the top of the show, that it does ebb and flow sometimes, that just having a really solid practice in place, so eating well, keeping it simple, if possible, I'm a huge advocate of a breath practice as well, and really trying to find a way to communicate, so whether or not that's journaling, whether you've got just a strong support system within your friends and family, whatever that is, just making sure that you take care of you.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's many, many ways to do it. You know, there's no right or wrong way. It's,
mm-hmm.
Again, it's just figuring out what works for you.
It's like your eye print.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you again.
You're welcome.
All right. Have a good night.
You too. Up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding us through the wee hours with his ambient music and his super hot voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock next week. Have a great night, everyone. Bye-bye. And I think I've got dead air because my commercial's not playing. Here we go.
The AMS Sexual Assault Support Center offers support services to survivors of sexual assault and other forms of violence, as well as their friends, family members, and partners. They are committed to education and the support of students, staff, faculty, and visitors of all genders. They offer counseling, accompaniments, information, and referrals. They also facilitate specialized workshops and training sessions, develop public education campaigns, and hold special events related to anti-violence work. All services are free and confidential. For more information on programs and services, or on volunteer opportunities, visit their website, www.ams.ubc.ca/SASC.
UBC AMS Mini School seeks to provide students and the community an opportunity to learn outside the classroom. Our courses are taught by professional instructors and delivered at the best rates around, starting at $45.
Check this out!
We provide a diverse array of courses, including, but not limited to, pole dancing, photography, guitar, swing dancing, wine tasting, and much, much more. Courses begin in October, February, and May, and typically run for 4 to 6 weeks. Check out www.ams.bc.ca/minischool for registration information.